Suppose you met somebody who had accomplished one of these three very different things. A, been named Coach of the Year by Tennis Magazine. B, founded a popular national pizza franchise. Or C, served as CEO of a successful real estate investment management firm. To have any of these credits to your name would be impressive enough, but Carl Chang has accomplished A, B, and C, and more. It seems only fitting that the company he leads, California-based Kairos Investment Management, gets its name from the Greek word for opportunity. Hi, I'm Paul Rasta, executive editor at CPE. Welcome back to Investment Matters, our podcast series featuring insights from the industry leaders who are at the center of commercial real estate investment today. In this episode, you'll hear how our guest's unusually varied experience informs his approach to leadership and how he's adjusting his company's strategy to meet today's challenging conditions. He'll also provide insights into a little discussed aspect of Federal Reserve policymaking, the role of its regional advisory boards. And he may even offer a few words about playing such tennis greats as Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras. Take a listen. Carl Chang, welcome to CPE Investment Matters. It's really nice to have you here.
Great. No, nice to be here, Paul.
You know, even as commercial real estate CEOs go, you have had a, I think it's fair to say, an unusually varied career on a number of different areas, and one of them being professional tennis. Now, probably your highest profile assignment in that sport came when you coached your brother, Michael Chang, who, of course, is a member of the International Tennis Hall of Fame and was also the youngest male player ever to win a Grand Slam singles title when he was a French Open champion in 1989. And also for your contributions to the sport, which also include the development of the popular Prince Longbody racket, you earned the distinction of being named Coach of the Year by Tennis Magazine in 1996. So what would you say, looking back on that era in your career, were some of the most significant takeaways in your experience that have informed your subsequent work as a real estate entrepreneur and CEO?
I think starting out in professional sports and certainly not knowing how successful, you know, we might have been through that experience. You know, it was a unique time in my life, having grown up with, actually playing against the likes of, you know, Andre Agassi, Pete Sampras, Jim Courier as juniors, even myself, and alongside my brother. And seeing the success that that generation had was pretty unique in itself. But I'd say as I drew back on those experiences, you know, being on the professional tour and really being behind the scenes, I take a lot from my experiences being out there, sort of living the grind as we first started, and then trying to navigate our way through some of the success we had over the years, and then certainly the success over a pretty long period of time. And a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes activity that perhaps somebody like myself, you know, were involved with on a day to day basis. So I think the balance of time management, management of different responsibilities that, you know, we try to alleviate the players from on a day-to-day basis, you know, it takes a lot of time, coordination, a lot of negotiation, and, you know, just trying to allow the athlete to perform at the highest level. I think a lot of those skills over that period of time and having to deal with other CEOs and other companies alongside the management responsibilities that I had really lent into sort of my next phase into my career, you know, being an entrepreneur and eventually starting a Kairos Investment Management. So I draw a lot on those experiences, you know, the level of negotiation, you know, experience, EQ, and negotiation. So it was a very formative years in my life.
And by the way, Carl, I feel like I would be remiss if I did not at least ask you this. Did I read correctly that you also registered wins with both Mr. Agassi and Mr. Sampras at one point in your career?
Oh, yeah. My goodness. I've played Andre. I can't even count how many times I've played Andre throughout my career. And, you know, I think if I saw Andre today, I could actually tease him and he'd actually remember the times that he's lost to me, probably. So pretty funny. But yeah, I've grown up playing Andre and Pete most of my life, all the way from 10 and unders, all the way through the national title, and then beyond. And so it is, those are fond memories for myself, having competed at that level and having, registered wins against the former number one players in the world. So my highlight, at least in my athletic career.
Yes, not many people on the planet can actually say that truthfully either. About those gentlemen. Well, let's jump around a bit in time, Carl. So when did you first develop your interest in commercial real estate? For example, was it on your radar relatively early while you were at Cal Berkeley? Did you gravitate to this industry over time? How did your interest in commercial real estate investment evolve?
Yeah, no, it gravitated early. I mean, a lot of the mentorship and guidance came from my father. My father's not in commercial real estate. Actually, my father's a chemical engineer, as well as my mother. My mother's a bioengineer, and like most Asian parents, had directed me into the sciences, not knowing anything different. But my father liked to read, a lot of the successful people of that generation had created a lot of success in real estate. And as my brother had some early success, he was encouraging me to focus on real estate and be educated as a vehicle, as a path to pursue. And that's a lot of where the origination and passion originally came from. Aside from my father sort of encouraged me along that road, I was able to make a lot of different friends and mentors that I looked up to, that took me under their wings while I was at University of Berkeley. And in fact, they guided me through my early formative years within real estate. So
you also, in addition to the family influence, it sounds like you also developed some contacts at Cal that proved to be helpful going forward as well.
Oh, very, very much so. Yes.
Well, let me ask you about Kairos. How did you happen to launch Kairos Investment Management? And for starters, the name of the company really jumped out at me. Would you mind telling us where it comes from?
Yeah, no, sure. Originally we had started out as Redwood, and it was we hired a third party agency to come up with the name. So it wasn't really something that created and was sort of dear to our heart. And we often got confused with Redwood Real Estate Trust when we first started. So John and I, and John's my president and co-founder of Kairos, decided to pivot. And I said, well, I'd like to come up, with the name that is a little more personal and meaningful. And then we decided to come up with Kairos. And Kairos, for a couple of different things, meant a few different things at a personal level. From an investment standpoint, our philosophy had always been looking for opportune time. Really focus on value and replacement cost. And so that really resonated with us from a real estate perspective, because we were always looking for the opportune time to take advantage of market dislocation and opportunities and discounted values to replacement cost. And then from a personal standpoint, it really aligned with a lot of the value systems that we carry out throughout Kairos and how we choose to lead and live our lives. And so there was a lot of personal alignment as well.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the direction of the commercial real estate market. And clearly that's on the mind of every decision maker in the industry. There's a lot of moving parts. One of the issues that's top of mind in commercial real estate is attracting workers back to the office. Do you have any thoughts about how office owners, managers, and tenants can bring people back to in-person work?
Yeah, it's a tough environment for commercial office real estate right now. I think the post COVID era, the remote access, the accommodation of hybrid workplace, during that period of time to sort of mitigate the spread of COVID has now sort of the post COVID era, and I think we'll be living with some form of COVID probably for the rest of our lives. is taking a new impact on commercial real estate. I think we're in an interesting phase where, you know, companies are struggling in a couple of different ways. One, to accommodate and or to decide long term whether or not they'll continue with this hybrid work model heading into what most likely is a recession, and a probably not a shallow one, and dealing with the lack of work productivity now that a lot of companies are facing in the hybrid and or remote work model. So I think from a landlord perspective, I think it's still going to be tough challenges. And I think that that's not a function of really people coming back to work in the immediate term, but really about, you know, debt maturities and overextension and debt coverage challenges, as, you know, just timing, if for, unfortunately for many, couldn't be worse. And so there's going to be some challenges here at the end of the year and heading into the first part of the year. But my own personal perspective is as companies begin to think about work productivity heading into the recession, I think you're going to see a little bit more bias toward, you know, encouraging people to come back to work. Because at the end of the day, at least what we've discovered and some of my peers have discovered, that productivity hasn't been as good, you know, in a hybrid and or a remote work style. And quite frankly, a lot of our young folks even now are really appreciating the camaraderie, the teaching, the mentorship that they're receiving now, having been isolated for the last couple of years. So
when you consider the challenges, the issues that are out there that are facing the real estate industry right now, how are those challenges and issues influencing the strategy at Kairos? And where do you see the opportunity for 2023?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of different perspectives. Obviously, we manage a variety of different strategies, and we invest in different asset classes as well too. But a specific question to your with regards to commercial office, my own personal perspective is, again, I think there will be some opportunity. You know, there's going to be some opportunity to buy some iconic real estate in, you know, really well located areas in the country at pretty large discounts to replacement costs. I mean, we saw some pretty aggressive inflation in the last year. We saw costs run up. And so I think at the discounted levels, because of the stress, it could, on a basis perspective, it could be very attractive. Again, who knows how long the recovery will take in commercial office, if at all, quite frankly. My own personal prediction is, again, you know, companies will begin to consolidate and look to improve work productivity. And I think most of them will come to the conclusion that, you know, coming back to work and working together is going to be a much more productive output, especially as people look to cut expenses and try to be lean in the coming couple of years during the recessionary times. And I think, you know, we still have a population density in certain regions that are quite dense, and we still have an affordability issue as well too. So as companies begin to think about, you know, where they're going to venture and where they're going to anchor as they look to recruit new talent, I think the balance of the two are going to be important. So, you know, I think there's going to be opportunity in commercial office in the right locations at the right price. Obviously, that's the highest risk of the spectrum right now. I still think there's going to be opportunities, you know, within the debt space, as well as I still think, even though we're seeing a slowdown in rent growth in multifamily, we still have a lack of affordability, a lack of available housing, you know, for many in the United States. And I think, you know, you'll continue to see a demand there. You just won't see the growth you saw in the last 12 to 18 months that you perhaps will see in the near term future in the next couple of years.
I'd like to turn to another area of your business accomplishments. Back in 2011, you are a co-founder of Pieology Pizzeria, which is a successful franchise. And last I heard, It's up to 130 locations around the in the U.S., around the country and counting. And could I ask, how did you decide to make a foray into the restaurant business?
Yeah, well, I'm a food lover. I enjoy food, and I'm a father of four beautiful daughters, and we enjoy eating together, and it's part of our enjoyment as a family. And you know, it was the stage in my life where I've always enjoyed food, and I was teasing my wife. I said, "Wouldn't it be fun to open up a restaurant?" And, you know, I was thinking of potentially two different avenues. One, I was thinking about opening up something on the Asian side, or a Chinese food restaurant, dumpling restaurant. And then having been born and raised in Hoboken, New Jersey, and grown up on the East Coast and then migrating west, I was thinking, golly, we really need a good New York pie over here. And so my wife said, well, we're not going to do Chinese. That's just too hard. He says, but, you know, if you want to do pizza, I could get behind that. But you, as long as you only promise to open up one. I said, sure, absolutely. Needless to say, I broke that promise.
you did not just open up just one, did you, Carl?
Yeah, no.
went a little beyond that.
Yeah, no, but it's been a fun project. Obviously, I'm not in the day to day anymore, and we've got great leaders running the company. But it's been an enjoyable project to share with the girls and the family, and been a fun part of our life.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. And again, were there any interesting takeaways from a business perspective that you have learned from being in the restaurant business?
Oh yeah, I mean, my primary responsibility and day to day job obviously is real estate and Kairos Investment Management, but I'm pretty active in investing in other companies, and you know, having been involved with Pyology, I've learned a lot. You know, the hospitality side of the industry is quite fascinating. And I've learned a lot through the process, the growing pains, the ups and downs in hospitality, especially during COVID. And what I've begun to appreciate is, you know, at the end of the day, the restaurant business is a people business. It becomes almost less about food. It really becomes about people and execution on a day-to-day basis, especially as you begin opening up more than one restaurant. And so that was enlightening, you know, having had to experience that and the growth and managing all of that, you know, with multitude of restaurants. And so I've learned a lot through that process, and, you know, understanding different personalities, having to find ways to encourage people, motivate people, especially during tough times like COVID. You know, those types of things were quite educational for myself.
Well, yet another one of your current commitments is service as a director on the Federal Reserve Board of San Francisco. You've been on the board since 2018, and more recently, you've been serving as chairman of the Los Angeles Branch Board. Of course, we hear all the time about what Chairman Powell and the Open Markets Committee are doing, but I'm really curious about what you and your colleagues on these boards really do. And could you fill in our audience on the role of the San Francisco Board and the LA Branch Board?
Yeah, sure. Be happy to. Yeah, no, I've been serving as a director for 5 years now. And actually the last year, as you mentioned, I've been serving as chairman of the board. And after this year, I'll be moving to the head San Francisco board the first of the year. From a personal standpoint, it's been a wonderful experience, actually. Other directors that I've served with are other industry other CEOs or industry leaders in different businesses. I've learned a lot from my peers. I've learned a lot about their businesses. And as directors, you know, the biggest value that we bring to the Fed is really our real-time experience, you know, within the various industries that we're involved with. And real-time data is really critical, especially as we've been faced with the last couple of years through COVID, and now in the last year in a high inflationary environment. And so real-time data, because the Fed tends to deal with a lot of backwards-looking data, they're looking for real-time data that perhaps is more reflective of current situation to try to come up with policy that'll properly direct the country. And so, you know, a lot of our meetings are really about, you know, that feedback, what's really happening within the industry, what's happening with regards to the labor force, what's happening with wages, what's happening with our businesses, you know, what challenges we're facing, you know, how inflation might be impacting us on a day-to-day basis, and whether or not we're seeing a shift in or a change, you know, from month to month. And so we try to provide that candid feedback. And then when you know, Mary, in this case, as she's the CEO of the San Francisco branch, provides her policy feedback, you know, that she's going to recommend to Chair Powell, we're pretty open about, you know, our opinions, whether we agree or disagree, whether we concur or not concur, and why that is the case. I think most of us, we run businesses that have had some success. And so we're pretty candid about the feedback. And, you know, when we agree, we share why. And when we don't agree, we're pretty candid as well, too, at least here on the LA branch.
Especially given your service on the Fed board, I think I would again be remiss if I didn't pick your brain a little bit about the direction of the economy, state of the capital markets, the impact of interest rate increases on commercial real estate investment in 2023, all of those issues that are on the minds of everyone in the industry. So what is sort of your current take on the direction of the real estate capital markets and investment for 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll continue to see, I wouldn't say as aggressive a stance from the Federal Reserve with regards to interest rates going forward. I think they're going to keep interest rates elevated for some time. And so because they're really focused on mitigating inflation, I think that's the primary focus. They'll continue to reduce the balance sheet, so they're not going to be accommodative with regards to providing liquidity into the system, which affects the capital markets, as your question alludes. And so we've seen a lot of disruption within capital markets. You know, we've seen the extreme volatility in the 10-year. We've seen an inverted yield curve now for an extended period of time. And we see spreads across the board gap out significantly over the last several months. I think we're, you know, in the end of 2022, where we've been in a price discovery mode with regards to, you know, where values for real estate, both across all asset classes, quite frankly, will come to a realization here the beginning part of 2023, where you'll have to see cap rates adjust. You know, at the end of 2022, I think across almost all asset classes, we saw negative yields, you know, with regards to cost of capital and where cap rates, you know, landlords were even contemplating or willing to trade at, even in the most perceived most stable asset classes like industrial, we saw a negative arb there. And so, you know, I think we're still in we'll continue to see a lot of price discovery and time pass here in the first quarter of 2023, where there'll be this dislocation, you know, with regards to where cost of capital will be and where assets will trade. And my suspicion is that you'll see a disruption and, you know, distress within the commercial office space for sure. You know, I think you'll continue to see some distress on the new construction side as well, too. And you're going to continue to see some more pressure on single family home as well, just because, you know, cost of capital is really at levels that we haven't seen for quite some time. And I think we're going to have to go through this discovery stage for the first part 2023 until we start to see, you know, either an acceptance of new values or an adjustment sort of in the capital markets.
And given all of these disruptive and fairly fluid conditions that you've been describing, Carl, what do you expect to be the impact on the strategy at Kairos, just generally speaking? Or is it your intention right now to more or less stay the course from 2022? Do you anticipate any major adjustments to what you do in your shop?
Yeah, no, good question, Paul. Yeah, we actually pivoted in 2021. You know, in anticipation of sort of a higher inflationary environment. You know, we had some large institutions being very aggressive with regards to values and pricing. And so we actually in 2021 looked to monetize and take profits off the table then, because we saw cap rates really compress when really cost of capital was near zero. And so we took advantage of the opportunity just because we maintained the discipline that when we start to see assets trade well above replacement costs, you know, that really becomes sort of financially engineered returns. And we tend to be very cautious about that. So we took chips off the table. In 2022, we were very opportunistic with regards to new acquisitions. They were harder to find for sure in 2022. So a lot of what we did was pause. And we actually started looking for debt investments and opportunities that we were, because we saw capital markets begin to, you know, constrict. We saw the flow of capital begin to slow down, which created a really a more of a lending environment and opportunity, which produced some pretty high yields for us and continues to do so. And we anticipate we'll continue to see that in 2023 as well. I think what we did start doing at the end of 2022 is we started dipping our toe into some distressed assets where we felt we were buying at such a large discount to replacement cost that it was too attractive not to dip our toe. And I suspect we'll maintain the same cautious posture in 2023, looking opportunistically for, you know, those type of deep discounted value propositions as they afford us the opportunity to do so.
Well, Carl, thank you for those insights. And just one more thing that I feel like I have to ask you, which is, do you ever still pick up a tennis racket now, even for fun? Or are you now just officially retired as a player and a fan rather than a participant?
Yeah, actually, my second daughter, Bethany, asked me the other night if I would go to hit a few tennis balls with her. And that's the first time I picked up a tennis racket in almost 2 years. I get more often asked, would I like to play pickleball these days than anything else? So,
well, these are all good skills to have, and it's always good to pick them up. That is for sure. Yeah. Well, Carl, thank you very much for joining Investment Matters today. It's great to talk to you, hear your insights, and best of luck in 2023.
Oh, thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure chatting with you today.